late Kirsten Nicole to start the hour. I'm with the New England and Keen there with You Haven't Told Me Anything That I Didn't Already Know. 14 minutes past 8. Let's try this one out on you then. Germany, those clever Germans are trialling a new hydrogen-powered train. The state-owned rail company said yesterday, signalling a transition away from gas-guzzling diesels as it aims for a carbon-neutral future. Developed with the German industrial giant Siemens, Deutsche Bahn said it will build a new developed train and a gas station for 2024 that will for the first time fuel hydrogen trains in just 15 minutes as fast as conventional diesel engines. And the fact that we will refuel the train as quickly as a diesel shows the climate-friendly transport transition is possible, said Sabine Jessic, a member of Deutsche Bahn's board. The National Rail Company intends to reduce carbon emissions to zero by 2050, meaning 1,300 diesel units will have to be replaced. We have to bring fossil fuel consumption to zero, then we will not run a single vehicle with conventional diesel, she said. Hydrogen-powered cars, that would be the next thing.
Question number one. Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison and 29. Amy Winehouse all died at what age?
27.
Question number two. Which Beatles single lasted the longest on the charts for 19 weeks?
Oh, no idea. It could be any of them, couldn't it, really?
Hey Jude. And finally, on this day in 1976, Chicago started a 3-week run at number one on the UK singles chart with which song?
If You Leave Me Now.
Well done, the American group's only UK number one. And it went on to win a Grammy Award for Best Pop Vocal Performance.
Remember that being played on the radio back in the day? Radio 2. I know, it was probably too advanced for them at that point. It's probably Radio 1, actually. Gosh, who'd have thunk it?
Riviera Radio. Business.
Henkel.
Good morning.
Yoda's back. Yoda's back.
I knew you'd like that. This is news. And that markets actually seem appreciative, actually, that that Joe Biden is going to pick or is going to propose the appointment of former Fed Chair Janet Yellen as Treasury Secretary. Markets will like it. Vast amount of experience, number one. Hopes of better coordination between the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department, particularly after the recent spat that we've seen over the course of the past few days. And she's been a strong supporter of extra stimulus as well. So markets certainly appreciating that.
Ah, fiscal stimulus, say you.
I mean, good news for you. You can bring that impression out for another 4 years, can't you? Wonderful.
I think I'll use it sparingly.
Let's go for that. US European equity futures trading higher. Asian stocks had a good performance overnight. This is after the US General Services Administration acknowledged Joe Biden as the winner of the presidential election, triggering the formal transition process, reducing some of that political uncertainty. Gives Biden access to funding along with national security briefings and access to other government officials, and hopefully pushing ahead with the greater emphasis on global policy areas such as climate change, international institutions and the promotion of shared values, along with a more multilateral approach to global trade, particularly at a time when President Trump is threatening to be tough once again on China. Positive feel for equities was helped this after AstraZeneca became the latest firm to deliver positive vaccine news. Although AstraZeneca shares, talked about this yesterday, AstraZeneca shares down 3.8% yesterday as investors questioned how effective its approach was compared to some of its major rivals with an efficacy rate of 70%, which a few weeks ago would have seen as certainly positive. The FDA, Joe Fauci, has been talking about... Anthony Fauci was suggesting somewhere around 50 to 60% efficacy would have been fine, but 70% certainly looks a little bit poor compared to the rivals. Of those said, after two shots, I think it rises up to 90%, and it's a different approach to the way in which they've gone about. It's a more traditional approach to developing a vaccine. So the positive is there's a number of approaches that seem to be effective and markets can rejoice in that. S&P 500 up 0.6%. Airlines, cruise operators doing well yesterday. We are looking at positive starts, I say, on the European bourses this morning. Currently calling the FTSE up 37 points. DAX over in Frankfurt up 68 points. CAC 40 in Paris up 38 points.
Still uses the protein spike, though.
Oh, you're good on this, aren't you? Back into your arc of knowledge once again,
isn't it? It's a modified chimpanzee flu virus that they're using.
Okay, but it's not the sort of synthetic approach.
No,
is it?
it's not the RNA. No,
that one.
It's not that one, but it still uses the protein spike to make copies when it's injected, so that when the immune system comes across the coronavirus, it fights it off, basically, because it's got all these like other dummy viruses in its body already. Yeah.
Is it the whole coronavirus, or there's elements of
the
coronavirus?
No, it's just the spike. Why it's called the coronavirus, because it's got those spiky bits on it. That's the protein in it.
I don't know if you can answer a second question on it.
I think there's this
lovely veneer of respectability on this subject. I don't know if it goes much deeper.
Probably not, but I mean, it's fascinating stuff, really, and especially the new way that they're using the genetic codes to make these vaccines. It's brilliant, really.
Yeah.
And people who say the side effects, it doesn't appear there's very little chance of any side effects with these with the RNA type vaccine.
Okay, I don't know that. Mrs. Potts works for the European Medicines Agency.
Does she?
It's more her field. So no doubt you two could discuss that a little bit further if you're interested in doing that.
I'm very interested in it.
She is your person for that.
Oh, well, no wonder you think about moving to Monte Carlo then, you know, with her working for the European Medicines Agency and, you know, Rishi Sunak about to hike taxes.
Well, let's not get into that.
Okay, well, let's talk about Rishi Sunak a bit, and more in particular about Andrew Bailey, who stuck his head above the parapet yesterday when addressing the House of Commons Treasury Select Committee.
Yeah, he's talking about the risks that are out there and the consequences of the coronavirus response. And as we head towards, of course, the spending review tomorrow. But most importantly, I think what we're going to see is the poor state of the nation's finances, a significant contraction, in fact, the worst contraction in three centuries for the UK economy, into double-digit levels. And, of course, we know debt has risen dramatically, now more than 100%. Of GDP. So it's been a significant response from the UK government, but it's not without cost. And then talking about the long-term consequences of that policy and what it will mean in terms of the future growth profile for the UK economy.
But saying that the coronavirus pandemic would be dwarfed by the economic cost of a no deal.
This is very true, but the hope is, of course, that Brexit end. I don't know if it's very true, but the Brexit end game is certainly looking like it's going to play out, and the hope is, of course, that that progress will be made. It has been held up, of course, due to failure to agree on the details of the Holy Trinity. That's the level playing field, governance, and fish. Get those right, and you'd hope everything else starts to fall into place. Despite those barriers, actually, 95% of the treaty is said to be final. Both sides appear to be keen to do a deal. Remains the most likely outcome. So much so, you could go on to say that there's a focus on creative ways in which to get a deal across the line. There's this discussion around a temporary deal. I don't know if you've been following this idea that you could impose a 7-year deal, which would coincide with the end of the next EU budget. Using a mixture of reviews and sunset clauses would give both sides the flexibility perhaps they're looking for. And even the European Parliament is apparently flexible, could run a special voting session between Christmas and New Year's Eve in order to sign off any deal, with the 28th of December perhaps looking the most likely date. As these details are indeed fleshed out, I suppose we can still expect to hear more noise on no-deal planning on both sides of the English Channel. So whilst the deal still feels imminent, it could take some take some time before the long game reaches a conclusion.
Oh, I missed that bit. I was concentrating on the modified chimpanzee flu viruses.
Well, you know, you can only do one thing at a time.
But a temporary deal, that sounds suspiciously like an extension to me.
Yeah, kicking the can down the road seems to be the way to go, yes. But at this point, I mean, it's just always so dramatic, a European deal, isn't it? It's always at the 11th hour. They always sort of come out tired and dishevelled from a committee room, although I guess that will be virtual this time around, to say, yes, we've finally achieved it. I mean, why, after 4 years, however long it's been, why do we have to think about the 28th of December as the final deadline date? It's quite remarkable.
Well, it might have helped if the UK hadn't threatened to break the terms of the withdrawal agreement.
Yes, and international law at the same time of that.
But only in a limited and specific way.
Quite right, too. Quite right.
Volkswagen is...
Parliamentary sovereignty is all key.
Parliamentary sovereignty. Volkswagen putting a lot of investment into electric vehicles.
Yeah, certainly ramping up investment in electric vehicles and other technologies over the course of the next 5 years as the world's largest car maker races to try and overtake Tesla as the leading maker of electric cars, investing a huge sum, 86 billion euros, to make the shift to electric cars, connected vehicles and self-driving cars in an effort to meet, I guess, the largest challenges to the sector that we've seen in a century. The company said it would double its investment in digitalization to 27 billion euros over the next 5 years. 11 billion euros will be spent creating hybrid electric versions for all of its main models. Volkswagen sold 11 million vehicles in 2019. Tesla sold 367,000.
That's what you need, isn't it? A self-driving vehicle.
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
Standard of your driving. The Australian police have never forgotten, have they?
You like that story, don't you?
Almost as much as you like my trousers story.
It was on the Bruce Highway.
On the what?
On the Bruce Highway.
The Bruce Highway?
Yes.
Is there a Sheila Highway as well?
That's what they wrote about in the Telegraph, strangely enough, when they covered the story.
Foreign exchanges, please.
Pound against dollar looking strong on hopes of a deal. 1.33 euro dollar coming in at 1.18.5, 1 euro 12 cents for your British pound this morning.
That's quite lively today, wasn't it?
It was nice, gentle, but it was, very fruity.
Lovely to see Janet Yellen back anyway.
I knew that would please you.
Okay, talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good day.
Hang pots and Barclays.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online. This is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
Sarah Lyster has the top stories across the Riviera.
14 people have been arrested in Marseille and €500,000 seized following a year-long investigation into a drug trafficking network. 9 kilos of drugs and 4 firearms were also found by police who had been investigating the gang working out of the northern districts of the city. Out of the 14 people arrested, 10 were imprisoned, 2 were placed under judicial supervision and 2 have since been released. Meanwhile, police at the French-Spanish border have reported that 4 tonnes of cannabis hidden in a load of fruit and veg have been seized by custom officials in over the past 2 weeks. The value of the goods is estimated at 13.7 million euros. In early November, custom officials checked several trucks from Spain on the A9 motorway, mainly carrying fruit and veg. Several people were arrested. Some have already been sentenced in Perpignan. In other news, France has reported less than 5,000 new cases of COVID-19 and 501 additional deaths in 24 hours. With 4,452 new cases confirmed in the last 24 hours, this is the first time that this figure has dropped below the 5,000 daily cases mark since September the 28th, showing that the epidemic continues to decline. Taking a closer look at the situation in the region, and according to Public Health France, through the coronavirus.fr website, on November the 23rd, the Alpes-Maritimes team recorded 479 current hospitalisations due to COVID-19. That includes 78 in intensive care. 1,894 patients have been discharged from hospital, and to date, 387 people have died in hospital since the start of the epidemic in the Alpes-Maritimes. For the Var region, 410 people are currently hospitalised, including 58 in intensive care. 1,961 patients have been discharged from hospital, and 357 people have died in hospital since the start of the epidemic. In Monaco, 1 new case of COVID-19 was declared on Monday, bringing the total number of residents affected by the coronavirus to 583 since the beginning of the pandemic. 23 people are currently hospitalised and 28 people are being followed by the Home Monitoring Centre. Meanwhile, since Monday, employees in Monaco have been invited to get vaccinated against the flu. The first phase and second phase of the seasonal flu vaccination campaign in the Principality was launched in October for residents over 65 and all Monegasques, and it's now available to employees, covered by Monaco's health system for free. French President Emmanuel Macron is to speak this evening at 8 p.m. to discuss the consequences of the lockdown. Macron is expected to announce the stages of a gradual exit from lockdown, while retailers and those considered during lockdown to be non-essential are expected to reopen possibly from Friday the 27th of November. Several sectors await news on their businesses, such as sports clubs, cinemas, theatres, bars, restaurants and hotels. Meanwhile, following a meeting on Monday with representatives from the industry and France's Prime Minister Jean Castex, a decision on the opening of ski resorts is to be announced in 2 weeks' time and will depend heavily on the health situation at the time. France's Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin has said that he is shocked at behaviour from police in the capital following images released on social media. 500 tents had been installed by associations on the Place de la République on Monday evening to raise awareness about the living conditions of migrants. Barely an hour after the installation, the police began to remove part of the tents, sometimes with people still inside. The minister has since requested a detailed report on the reality of the facts from the Prefect of Police by midday today. Meanwhile, the trial of former French President Nicolas Sarkozy has been abruptly adjourned pending a medical report on former top judge. Gilbert Azibert had requested a postponement, arguing that heart and lung problems prevented him from attending court, leading to all the defendants the refusal of appearing via video link. Sarkozy vigorously contests the accusations of bribery and attended Monday's short hearing in person. Sarkozy is the first former French president to appear in court as a defendant, although his predecessor as president, Jacques Chirac, was convicted of corruption in a fake job. French supermarket Monoprix has defended its latest advertising campaign in a statement saying that the group wanted to bring a little lightness and humour to these gloomy times by making its customers smile. To inform its customers of the closure of non-essential departments, Monoprix had opted for an ironic in-store poster campaign, posters stating that clothing for children up to 3 years old is essential again, others are asked to stop growing, or if bottles were not needed, we should have been warned not to have babies during the first lockdown. These messages have been displayed in Monoprix shelves to indicate the closure of non-essential goods imposed by the French government. Finally, we've all been asked to fill in attestations to justify our reason for circulating outside our homes as part of the lockdown in France in the fight against COVID-19. One man, however, seems to have taken the duty of filling out the form to another level. According to local media in Brittany, police recently fined a man who left his home with a written lockdown declaration stating he was out to smash a guy's face in. The man, who has not been named, had correctly filled in the legally required declaration with his name, address and time that he had left his home. However, officers found that instead of ticking one of the boxes stating a legitimate reason to go outside during lockdown, such as going shopping, visiting the doctor, travelling to work or exercising, the man had written "Allez péter la gueule d'un mec," an activity not covered by the form. When asked by police what he was doing, as he was seen lurking behind a car late at night, he explained to police that he was waiting for someone to smash their face in. He had the written form with his real name and time that he had left his home, but police soon informed him that his reason for going out was not valid.
Riviera Radio Sports News.
Football, two games in the English Premier League last night. Here are the details from BBC Sports.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Hello from Colm Harrison at the BBC Sports Centre. Southampton missed a chance to move into the top three in the table by drawing 1-1 at Wolverhampton Wanderers on Monday. They took the lead through Theo Walcott, who scored his first goal for their club since rejoining them on loan from Everton. But Pedro Neto equalised for Wolves 15 minutes from time. Despite the points, Southampton remained fifth. Wolves are up to ninth. After 8 games, Burnley have finally claimed their first league win of the season. Chris Wood scored the only goal of the game as they beat Crystal Palace to move out of the bottom three for the first time this season. Here's the Burnley manager, Sean Dyche.
We were showing signs, I spoke about before the game, and the last couple we have done, there's 3 clean sheets in the last 5 games, so I felt that was something to build on. And tonight we altered the way that we've operated in the attacking third. You know, I thought we created 2 or 3 golden chances. We take one and then just really it gets a bit nervy because we haven't found that first win. So to get that one done, I think will do us a world of good.
Chelsea and Manchester United are both in Champions League action on Tuesday. United are at home to Istanbul Başakşehir, who beat them in Turkey 3 weeks ago, of course. Chelsea, meanwhile, are in France to face Rennes, where a win would secure their place in the knockout stage with 2 games to spare. Chelsea are unbeaten with 7 points from 3 matches, and midfielder Mason Mount says it's important to keep the momentum going.
We know what we can do in this group. Our goal is always to be number one and to push for titles, and I think we definitely know we can do that. The most important thing at the moment is keeping that momentum going.
And for more football news from the BBC, go to bbc.com/football.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Yes, Chelsea against Rennes tonight's in Group E. Manchester United play Istanbul Basaksehir in Group H, and Paris Saint-Germain host RB Leipzig, who can cause a few surprises at times. Cricket, South Africa are training in two separate camps in a bid to limit the spread of coronavirus ahead of the start of the limited overs series against England. Two players have tested positive for COVID-19 and a further two are self-isolating. South Africa and England meet in the first T20 international on Friday, with a one-day series due to start on December the 4th. Rugby Union, Luke Cowan, Dickey and Anthony Watson are both back in the England squad for the Awesome Nations Cup game against Wales this weekend. Cowan Dickey has been recovering from knee surgery, while Watson has recovered from an ankle injury. Both are available for selection for Saturday's game against Wales and Llanelli. And there was one game in the Guinness Pro 14 last night. Munster were 27-13 winners at Glasgow Warriors. Here's the marine weather forecast for coastal areas up to 20 miles offshore the Isle Maritime and the Var. The general situation, high pressure, 1,025 millibars over the region. Winds are variable, force 1 to 3. The sea is calm. Visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, 1,026 millibars. And the outlook for Wednesday, clear skies, force 1 to 3 variable winds, calm seas and good visibility. For North Corsica, winds are northerly, force 2 to 4. The sea is slight, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Cap Corse, 1,025 millibars. Then the outlook for Wednesday, partially cloudy, force 1 to 3 variable winds, calm seas and good visibility.
Riviera Radio, weather.
Mainly fine again, light to moderate variable or southwesterly winds. Top temperature 16 degrees this afternoon. Overnight lows 8 degrees on the coast, 3 degrees inland with clear skies. Wednesday and Thursday mainly fine. Highs of 15 or 16 degrees. Finally,
does every parent really have a favourite child? Parents weigh in on the controversial topic and what they say might just surprise you. The debate was sparked in the new series of the royal drama The Crown. A season 4 of the Netflix show deals with the fact that British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher had a favourite son, upon which point the Queen was led to consider which of her own four children was her favourite. Australian mums on Facebook had given several responses to the subject, but many agreed that they do in fact have one child that they prefer over the others. One mother said in a response that a lot of parents agreed with, "I tend to favour my son and my husband favours our daughter." Another said, "I definitely do. My daughter is a high achiever. I'm so proud of her. My son, who is 4 years younger, can't get it together." Some said their favourite child changes daily or even hourly, depending on who is behaving well. And while others said that they don't think that they have a favourite, but the relationship is different with each of their children. Some parents were horrified by the idea that they would have a favourite, while others said they're convinced that parents have one child that they prefer, despite them insisting otherwise. One mother admitted, "I don't have a favourite as such, but one is a lot easier than the other."